But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I must have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Okay, so we're going to start with the club matches at the weekend, as usual, lads. RT are in the mix on Saturday. It's Westport versus Ballina at 3 o'clock. Not a great time for a match, like I always say, on a Saturday, but I'll be making time to watch Westport Ballina. Obviously, we know Westport of Lee Keegan, Owen McLaughlin, Fionn McDonagh, Kevin Keane is at full forward, like Connor was telling us recently. And Ballina, well, they've Pádraic O'Hara, but they're one of the big traditional teams, obviously, who are looking to win a county title for the first time, I think, since sometime in the noughties. So plenty of interest in this one. The other one then at 5 o'clock is Ballintubber versus Knockmore. Knockmore defending champions. Ballintubber won it the 2 years before that. I don't know what it is about Ballintubber, but every time I watch Ballintubber matches on television, they're desperately boring kind of games. They have an unusual style, Ballintubber, in a pretty defensive style for Mayo football. So I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards the Westport Ballina one as the big game on the Saturday, Lee.
Yeah, and you already mentioned that Ballintubber are missing Killian O'Connor. There was rumours going around that he'd be featuring or playing some sort of a small role, but it didn't materialise. They do have Dermot O'Connor and Jason Gibbon in midfield, which is a very strong midfield. And they're up against Knockmore, who are obviously reigning champions. Kevin McLaughlin's very much their main man. But I would say that, yeah, the Westport and Ballina match is definitely the main one. You know, Westport, they just, you know, it's sort of star-studded. You've already mentioned Lee Keegan. You know, a player of the year nomination for the county scene. I don't think he'll win it, but he definitely was deserving of his nomination, and he seems to have brought that form into the club season. Owen McLaughlin's back, you know, after his broken jaw. He got a goal last week, so it's really good to see him back. And yeah, so Westport Ballina, definitely the pick of the two.
Yeah, I'm a Westport fan, I have to say. I want them to win it. I'm rooting for them. I love Lee Keegan. I love Westport Town. Nice bit, a few surfing beaches a few miles on past Westport. I just like that area of the world. Croagh-Patrick's up there. I'm all over Westport this year.
A great place to go on your holidays is right. No, anytime I've been listening to Connor, like, he's been bigging up this Westport team, I suppose, from the experience that Lee talked about to the young lads coming through. We know that they won an All-Ireland Intermediate club around 5 years ago now, and they've been building since then. So, like, you'd fancy them to win that game this weekend, because Ballina, while they went well last year, they were well beaten by Ballintubber in the group stages this year. So they're probably, like, aside from Pádraic O'Hara, they're maybe not as strong as they have been. So I'd say the Ballintubber and Knockmore game will probably be the tighter one, like the reigning champions against Ballintubber, who've traditionally been the kingpins of Mayo football. So that should be a very tight game. Like, Ballintubber, they're missing Killian O'Connor, but they still have, like, a lot of these lads who've played for Mayo: Michael Plunkett, Brian Walsh, Dermot O'Connor. So it should be a good Saturday afternoon of Mayo Club football.
Yeah, definitely. Traditionally, more the last 10 years, Ballintubber kind of have come to the fore. But yeah, they're quarterfinals as well, not semi-finals, by the way. They're only two of the quarterfinals. Sunday then on TG Cahir, the first game is Naomh Connell versus Kilcar. We spoke a little bit about this on Monday's show. We know all the spice to this. We know that they drew in the county final of 2020 a couple of months ago. We know the game went to penalties. We know Naomh Connell used an extra substitute who went on to score a penalty. We know Kilcar appealed the decision. We know Naomh Connell were able to fight that appeal on a technicality. And that's kind of where we're at now. My information is that Kilcar might be dropping that altogether. They might just be going to accept it. Even though I do think Naomh Connell should have offered them a replay, because they were, you know, the guilty parties, and the sub did score a penalty. Anyways, I mean, there's going to be nothing between this, Lee. There's a lot of spice, you know, on this already. It's not going to be a classic. We know what Donegal club football is like. It's very defensive, and both teams, when they're attacking, refuse to bring the ball into contact. There's an awful lot of sideways passing outside the defensive screen, and it can be a hard watch at times. I just think the added spice on this, you know, will make you sit through some of those prolonged periods of possession.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be tension just straight from the off, given what happened only a couple of months ago. Regardless of what football, even if it's very cagey, you know, like, every single score will be met with huge cheers. It'll feel like a winning goal, like, just everything. Yeah, and there's a lot of stars on display, you know, like Leo McClune, and then the likes of, for Kilcar, you know, Paddy McBrady, Ryan McHugh, Mark McHugh. all going up against each other, these county stars that know each other very well. You're not going to be able to keep your eyes off it. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. Niamh Connell, like, I mean, when you look at Kilkenny's kind of star players and Niamh Connell's, Kieran Thompson's probably their best player. You and he's brilliant for them. Niamh Connell, I don't know how to do it. When it comes to a 50-50 game, they're like a prize fighter. Like, they generally come out on top of these. Like, it was the Gweedore three matches in the county final, they came out on top. It was Kilkenny, they came out on top. They just grind teams down. Like, they're the best at it.
Exactly. Like, I remember watching a few of those games because I have a few friends up in Gweedore who played for them, and you just think Gweedore, it's such a talented team, you think they're eventually going to break through here, but Niamh Connell, they're just so gritty and, as you said, sort of prize fighters. Like, and I don't know, there's something about this game now this weekend, like, as you mentioned, it's kind of, you're not looking forward to maybe this, the sideways pass and the screens and all this sort of thing, but there's something about kind of the there's brilliant play, I suppose, the brilliant players that are there that you're kind of looking forward to seeing, and you're looking forward to seeing them kind of breaking through the screens. Like, the likes of, you often see Kieran Thompson when he gets his points, it could be at the end of like a massive kind of sequence of hand passes, but then he shows a bit of brilliance. Like, and you know, you kind of, there's something about it that you're just looking forward to it, and sure, the spice as well. Like, you don't want to encourage ever any rows to break out, but I'd say if ever there's going to be a row breaking out, it might be in that game this weekend.
Yeah, Donegal club football is generally okay for the rows. Talking about rows, Trillick are playing Killyclaherly, so, like, I mean, you can talk to us about this.
Yeah, so a lot of county stars going to be playing against each other here. Trillick have got a big injury concern at the minute with Matty Donnelly. He was carried off in the last match, and I haven't heard any updates since on what's going on there. So whether or not he'll be available, I don't know. His brother Richie Donnelly obviously plays, but their star man is Lee Brennan.
Yeah.
He takes the 45s, the frees, and he's a sharpshooter all round. I did think that when Fergal and Brian took over, and that he made himself available again, because he opted out Mickey Hart's last 2 years, I think. I did think he was going to feature a lot more. I thought he'd be the kind of player that they were looking, that sort of difference, that bit of flair. But, you know, he didn't feature probably as much as he wanted to, but the club will give him that chance to do so. And it's sort of the same with Killyclaher. So Mark Bradley's captain in name. And he sort of had a mixed season in terms of county. Obviously, it's his most successful. You know, he got an All-Ireland and an Ulster, which is obviously amazing, and he played a big role in that, coming off the bench mostly, but he didn't feature at all in the All-Ireland final. He did start in the Ulster final and was one of the first subs on, but, you know, he hit the ground running straight away with the club football. He got a hat-trick in his first game, and Tiernan McCann, his club mate, is also playing, so he'll be on a similar situation, you know, used more probably as an impact throughout the county scene. So yeah, club football it's a real outlet for them, and it'll be a really good match. Friday night lights as well, so something to watch on a Friday.
Friday night lights. So we've no problem with the club players having to take a half day off work. It's just the inter-county players. No, but that's it. That's Friday night lights. No one complained about that. Anyways, that's going on for years. Club matches on in the evenings. The other one, that's Friday night. The other one on TG Cahir, Niall, is Patrickswell versus Kilmallock. You'd imagine on paper Patrickswell are I'm sure, favourites to win this. It's the first time they've met in the final since 1992. I'm surprised at that, because we were joking here a couple of weeks ago about, you always know that it's going to be Kilmallock, Patrickswell, Adair or Doon. Kilmallock, Patrickswell, Doon and the Pearse get the semi-finals, but it's never transpired that Kilmallock and Patrickswell. Interesting, Kilmallock won that game in 1992. They've won three finals since. None of them, the three they've won, have been against Patrickswell or na Pearse. So Patrickswell need to kind of man up here now and beat Patrickswell or, you know, one of the big teams and get back into the mix.
Yeah, like, on paper, Patrickswell are definitely the strongest team in Limerick at the moment. Like, it's, like, I think I said it before, but, like, there's, you wouldn't get to anywhere else where you've talent like Aaron Gillan, Keane Lynch and Dermot Burns in the one team. Like, that's better than any club team is going to have.
Well, if you could handpick three players for any club team, hurling team in the country, you'd be looking at the centre-back, the midfielder and the high-scoring corner forward.
Exactly.
You don't get a better spread of county players than that, do you?
And I think beyond that as well, like, they have some very good players as well. Like, there's Josh Considine, who was on Limerick underage teams, like Jason Gillan as well, the two O'Briens. Like, so Patrickswell, they're very strong on paper. I think, yeah, they've won two county titles in, like, since 2016 and 2019. But yeah, as you said, they'll be kind of gunning to win one against one of the big boys. But, like, Kilmallock, they're kind of, as you were describing Niamh Connell there, kind of just reminded me of Kilmallock, just these sort of dogs who are always sort of there, like, you know. And I mean dogs, I mean that in the best sense of the word, in that, like, they won the county title in 2014. They went all the way to the All-Ireland Club Final that year against Ballyhale. And nine of those lads are still involved. Like, nine of them will probably be starting this weekend for Kilmallock, like, which is, it's a huge sign, like, of, I suppose, a positive sign of those players that they've stayed committed to their clubs, that they've stayed involved. And as well as that, they have a few young lads as well, like Oisin O'Reilly is scoring all around them for them, and sure, Graham Mulcahy is still doing the business.
Oisin O'Reilly is centre-forward, no? He looked really good player.
Really good. He scored 2-4 in the semi-final against Doon. Like, so, like, Kilmallock will be, like, for all the kind of star talent that Patrick's well have, like, Kilmallock will be no pushovers whatsoever, because a lot of the games at the wind are these high-scoring games and they just kind of grind them out.
Right. Okay, that's going to be an interesting one. There's a semi-final in Kildare. Naas are playing Maynooth. This is fairly interesting in that Naas don't have a manager, so we don't know what happened here. We can't really get to the bottom of it. Not, I've heard one or two rumours that I can't say on the show because they're not confirmed. So Paul Kelly was doing their job, and remember, Paul Kelly got Thomas Davis to a county final in Dublin. He's Naas manager now, and they've been flying it all year. They've won every game. Obviously in the championship, they're in the semi-final. And whatever's after happening between Paul Kelly and the club, Paul Kelly has stepped down before a semi-final. So, like, I mean, Owen Doyle, their county centre-back, is now the manager. So it's a very weird situation. And, like, I mean, I'm looking at it, like, if you're, what's after happening here? We can't speculate on the rumours that are going around. But why did none of the players have, you know, stood beside him to say, here, well, you know, he's either staying or we're not staying. Owen Doyle has taken his job, the cap, you know, probably the captain. So, like, I mean, I just don't know what's after happening here. It's a weird one.
I'd say Owen Doyle is, after getting a job, he wasn't looking for now. No. at the start of the year. But yeah, it's a weird one, because
he'd nearly have to pick the exact same team that Paul Kelly picked.
Or else he'd be seen to. Yeah, that's the beef there. But no, like, usually when something like this happens and a manager's gone in the middle of the year, it's because the club is going bad. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Naas have won every game, and I think they've won most of them by like 10 or 11 points. Like, they beat Johnstown Bridge by 10 points. They've been kind of playing really well. Like, but something has happened. There's some sort of row going on. So some people aren't going to be happy. So that will, I'd say, that it's a strange situation for the Naas players, but those players are going to have to stick together, and wouldn't it make it all the sweeter for them now if they were to win the next two games and win the county title, like, for whoever their grudge is with. Like, I don't know who it is, like, but
yeah. Well, that's the thing, Lee. I suppose the manager has set this structure in place. The training has obviously been very good. He's picked the team. He has them playing the way they want to play. I suppose Owen Doyle is just going to say to them, lads, let's keep the way we're going. You know, they could get a bit of a siege mentality, a bit of, you know, let's do this for him if they're behind him. Let's do this for the club and show that it's not all his work if they're against it. You know, they could get a little bit of a kind of a siege going. And, like, I mean, I suppose outside of a little bit of, you know, tweaks to your tactics and a bit of work on the opposition, like, at club level, is that as important? Usually clubs know each other inside out.
Yeah, I mean, like, due to COVID and stuff, the word unprecedented has been completely overused, but this is just so hugely unprecedented in every respect. I mean, this late on in the season for the manager just to leave and for there to be no clear-cut reason as to why is so bizarre. Owen Doyle has like you already mentioned, yes, they've just picked the same team because favouritism and everything else have come in the way.
Yeah.
If it was a situation where it was maybe a player struggle in terms of falling out with the squad, maybe that was because of tactics. I mean, I don't know. You'd feel like, because of the momentum that they've had and they've won every game and they've got to the semi-final and they're so close to their first final in such a long time, that you'd feel that, like, the only players who could really be that upset are maybe the ones who aren't playing. But by and large, you would think the ones playing, you know, are happy enough with it. So, yeah, I mean, like, siege, what a story it'll make. You know, siege mentality is definitely the right term to use if they were just to grit down. You know, all the hard work's been done. You know, they've done the preseason, the fitness is there, they know their tactics down to the T, they've got the momentum behind them. It is just sort of a matter of carrying it forward. And what a story it would be if they did it.
Yeah, I think at this stage they probably could do it themselves. It'll be an interesting one. Keep your eye out for Kilkenny hurling semi-finals. We know Tullerone playing O'Loughlin Gales. Paddy Deegan watch, Tommy Walsh watch. That's all I'm saying on that. That's enough to tee that one up. Paddy Deegan at full forward. JJ Delaney at full forward. We have, but JJ Delaney's a different club altogether, as we know. Ballyhale Shamrocks versus James Stevens. We remember that absolute classic that James Stevens probably should have won, and Cheddar was out leaning over the railing. That was on TG Cahir. It was a Friday night, wasn't it, Niall? That this was drama was going on.
I think it was a Saturday afternoon, but I'll never forget it.
It was fantastic. So keep your eye out for that. One other game we want to mention before we get into a bit of news here, because there's a big bit of news regarding King Henry, is the Cork hurling quarterfinal. Is Douglas versus Blackrock. We know what, that's the game we want to focus on. Aaron Zone are playing Middleton, Imakilly playing Glen Rovers. They're all big ones. You'd argue Imakilly, Glen Rovers is the biggest one. But Douglas versus Blackrock, we were looking at this, Niall, because on Monday we wanted to talk about Douglas, only I rushed on past it and forgot about it. Like, we were looking at this because I was looking at Douglas and I looked down through their team and I was like, where are the Cadigans? You know, I'm pretty sure Shane Kingston kicks football. None of them were kicking football. And then you go, I was saying to you, are they all hurling? You says all of them are hurling. Douglas only have one dual player out of all their players that can play both. Only Brian Hartnett, who's a county footballer, is hurling and kicking football. How big is Douglas that they can manage to not use their dual players?
That was the first question in my mind, and I looked it up to see they have a population of like 26,000. So like 4,000 more than Port Laois. Like, so it is a big place, like, because for dual clubs, the dual clubs I think is straight away is Loughmore, Castellini and Cratlow, and between their hurling and football, it's nearly the same thing. Like, it's nearly 10 players playing each. Like, you know, both teams are the same. But Douglas, obviously, they have a big pick. As you mentioned, like Shane Kingston, I was looking it up this morning, he kicked minor football for Cork. Alan Cadigan actually played senior for Cork in the league a few times, which we know Owen Cadigan won in All-Ireland. And just,
so this isn't a case, but I can understand your argument saying, right, Douglas is big, so they actually tell children hurling or football. Douglas have dual players that are proven footballers, only they're not using them. Do you know what I mean? They obviously haven't made them choose, or else Brian Hartnett wouldn't be playing both. So these lads have decided only to play one code for their club. Like, I don't know. I don't want to criticise them too much. I'm looking at Conall Keeney playing dual for Ballyboden and he's 39 and he loves it. Why would you not? I think that kind of goes against what the club is about. Surely you turn out for the two teams and help both teams for your club. It's not like they're training the shite out of you. You know, like at Intercounty, or the commitment's too much. Can you not play a game every Saturday?
Is it a sign of that, though, maybe, Willie, that...
But club, I don't want that to come into club.
I know, but it must be something to do with that. Like, the clubs, you know, they're training so often and maybe the hurling team is training so much that the boys can't train with the footballers. Like, because Douglas, they've some brilliant footballers, Sean Powter, Kevin Flaff, these boys in the Cork seniors. And should they be well able to hurl too? Like, but it's just... Yeah.
But maybe they didn't. Now, I'm from a big club, Port Laois, now. I never hurled. Like, I do... I don't know why. There's one or two in my class I remember hurled. I don't remember ever being asked to hurl or anybody say. I don't remember ever saying, no, I don't want to. Just don't remember it happening. I think I played soccer, I played Gaelic football, I played rugby. Hurling was never kind of offered to me, which is probably a, you know, it's a bit of a slight on my school and Port Laois as well, that I wasn't. Maybe at underage level, they don't mind that separation. I'm not too sure.
Maybe we can go out for a puck here one of the days, Willie, and we'll get you started. But I remember, like, we were saying this morning, I think Nafina brought in the same rule when Pillar Caffrey was the manager. But yeah. I was on to a lad from Nafina this morning because I thought that rule was still in place. But they have one lad who plays both hurling and football. And he was telling me that a few lads started at the start of the year. They said they'd give both a try, but obviously decided in the middle of the year that they weren't able to do it. So it could be just a sign of that the commitment required is just increasing and increasing, and lads feel that they just want to commit to one code. It is a sad thing to see, but like, I suppose when Loughmore and Cratlow, at least that thing is still going in some clubs, yeah. But other clubs are taking it a bit more serious.
I think it was a sad thing to see even at intercounty level, and you accept that, Lee, but at club level, you know, I think that's going too far. I remember when we won the county final 2004, we won the double. We had about five or six lads playing both. And we just wouldn't have them, the footballers wouldn't have them the week of the hurling match. And we get on with it. We're training. We're training every second week. We have them to build up to the match. And then the dual fellas were telling me, this is fantastic. We never have a boring week, as in the 2 weeks before the match. Every week that we train is in the build up to a big game. We bloody love it. So I don't know, has that always kind of, you know, made me bias against why would you not want to play a match every weekend and have your training, you know, the really enjoyable week of a match training?
Yeah, I mean, like, it sort of falls into, like, it's not so much maybe that it's the training so difficult and that the matches are so draining and everything, because, you know, they'll be tapering themselves pretty well. But sometimes you can just be sick of looking at a set of football posts or GAA posts, you know, regardless, and just being out every evening. It doesn't really matter what it is you're doing, but it can become a little bit monotonous. But then the opposite argument to that is, of course, like, you know, if your football isn't going particularly well, you're really enjoying your hurling, or vice versa. Like, one's always like, one can always be a release. And then if both are going well, then you're absolutely flying. I manage the East Belfast Ladies football team, and this is obviously on a much lower scale, but like, we have dual players, you know, a handful of the girls, they play Camogie, and we just work it. So they play their matches on a Wednesday, so they just don't train with us on a Tuesday, but they come and, you know, if they're available, they come and they help me out, you know, they lift the cones and everything else, and they be around the team talks. And then with the Cabogues, they would train on a Friday, but the football matches are on a Saturday, so they don't train for them, you know. So it works out well enough that, you know, it's just a matter of managing it. And I know that's on a much lower scale, but you got to have two managers from the football side and the Camogie hurling, whatever it is, side, be sympathetic to the fact that, you know, and be transparent with it as well, and just understanding that, you know, that this is a young person. You've only got really 10, maybe 20 years, like, of playing sport, you know, and you got to give it a good go while you're fit enough to do so.
Yeah, no, it's definitely it. There has to be a good relationship, but it's an interesting one. If this continues on, I don't know, imagine it'll only happen in small clubs that don't have numbers, and, you know, they have to do it. The other big news breaking last night is that Henry Shefflin's going to manage Galway. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody. His name wasn't mentioned. This man, more than happy. He's the Sunday game kind of star man. He's the most decorated hurler in history. 3 player of the years. 2 All-Irelands. And he's warming up. He's sitting around, everybody thinks, waiting for Cody. Cody's only got one more year and that's it. Henry Shefflin was never going to any other county. It knocked me off my seat last night, Niall, honestly. Nobody saw this coming, because Davey must be sick. Like, I mean, Davey had gone around, got a brilliant backroom together, because his backroom team in Wexford, I think, you know, had gone away and done other things. He almost got the old band from Clare 2013 back together, Louis Mulqueen in the mix. And Henry comes out of absolutely nowhere.
It'll be a real sort of a stomach punch for Davey to take, like, because especially when you're kind of like half, I'm not saying he was offered the job, when you're half offered the job, you think you have it, and then they kind of just go for someone else, like, you know, it's as if you're second choice, like, so it's a tough one to take for him. But as you said, yeah, like, Henry was kind of seen, I don't know, it was nearly like it was a rite of passage that he was going to take over from Brian Cody. But I suppose when this offer just came up for him, he was probably just thinking, do you know, Brian Cody is there, and he could be there forever, like, he's showing no signs of wanting to leave or wanting out yet. Like, so, yeah. Henry just said, like, this opportunity, like, Galway, I know they had a disappointing year last year, like, but, like, I was looking through the ages of those players this morning, like, Dahi Burke's only 28, like, Conor Cooney's 28, Cathal Mannion's 26. Like, we know about all the minor teams that they've won All-Irelands with. They've been in All-Ireland under 20 finals as well. Like, so Galway have so much talent, and it would have been a tough one for Henry to turn down. Like,
yeah, that's a very attractive job. Like, they were one of the favourites for the All-Ireland this year, only they had a bad, you know, they had a bad championship.
Exactly. And should, like, I've seen anyone you've been talking to or seen from Galway, should, they're absolutely delighted, like, because what a big name Henry is, first of all, but as well as that, he's a brilliant managerial record so far. Like, every championship he's entered as a club manager, he's won. Like, that's from Kilkenny, Leinster, All-Ireland. He's won 6 championships between them, and he's in his 7th now with Thomastown, and has them back to a semi-final. And I think that Thomastown job will stand him here, because, do you know, when he's managing Ballyhale, it's his own club, and maybe, like, you know, he'd know his way around the place, know all the lads, and it would be fairly, I suppose, it'd be easy enough in one way to manage your own club, but to get to know the Thomastown boys and to see how you sort of get on in that situation, like, that'll stand him here when he moves out to Galway.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. So does he ring Joe Canning, Lee, do you think? Like, I mean, I'd say Joe Canning, in a way, is really pissed off with disappointment, because Joe Canning, he's after retiring, he's more than happy with his decision. Joe, I've done it, you know, and he doesn't want to get into punditry, you know, he probably focus on the business, hurled a bit with Portumna, I think he got injured. Now, with an appointment like this, and if he gets the phone call off Henry Shefflin, like, if he's 100% happy with his decision, does that go down to 80% now, or what's Joe Canning thinking?
It probably has to be fair. I mean, he actually recently came out, might have been an off the ball or something, and they sort of poked the question, you know, would you be one of these players that could ever potentially come out of retirement or give it another go? And he was just, you know, point blank, no way, definitely not me. I'm very stubborn like that. And I'm wondering now, is he maybe regretting saying that? Because obviously them quotes could be thrown against him if his mind were to change. But surely it must just be like your curiosity must be peak. You know, this is maybe, you know, with Kilkenny's like greatest ever hurler maybe, and the chance to work with him, because you were never going to work for him, you know, with Kilkenny or anything. So, and I think he took his record earlier on this summer, so there's a bit of that between them. And like, I mean, wouldn't it be a great story to see like that it took that sort of stardom and the sheer respect you must have for Henry to coax someone like Joe out of retirement. I mean, that'd be a brilliant story, and I'd love to see it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Henry was saying early this year, he was saying that inter-county management wasn't on the horizon for him, that it didn't kind of suit him. I'm not sure where he had been saying that. But like, I mean, it's 3 hours to Galway. Like, it's a big commitment. 3 hours there, 3 hours back. That's from Ballyhale now. It's less from Kilkenny City, but Ballyhale must be on the other side of Kilkenny. It's a big commitment for him, you know, and he'll have to give up his Sunday game job. Do you know what I mean? This must have just been an offer he couldn't refuse.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, like it's a big commitment for Henry to make, like, and because it is such a long drive. But I suppose it does come back to that. Like, he sees himself as, like, obviously when he was managing Ballyhale, Thomastown, like he's a manager now, and like when you get an opportunity like that,
yeah,
like you're going to find it very hard to turn it down, like, because like
top three team in the country. Like, I suppose the next step from club, you going to wait around from Kilkenny forever, or does he take the, you know, you'd have a bit of respect for him for taking it.
And he could be waiting around forever with Kilkenny, like, you know, so no, I'd say, like, and as you were mentioning there about Joe Canning, like, there were always sort of parallels drawn, weren't there, between him and Henry when they were playing, like, and I know Joe is retired now, but wouldn't it be, I think everyone would love to see it, Joe hurling under Henry, if it was just for a year, just to, it'd be great to see, like, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Henry definitely playing full forward too, you could be sure of it, especially at Joe's age as well, he might pump one or two long ones down on top of him. Restrictions are being lifted, so we know tomorrow, not going to go on about this too much, but there's some restrictions, not all. We won't get into the nightclub social distancing. That'll affect the two of you more than me, lads. I'm too old. How are you going to deal with this? Anyways, but some restrictions being lifted tomorrow. So sporting venues are going to be allowed to operate 100% capacity outdoors. That's from Friday on. Doesn't affect club anyways, lads, because we know at the moment it's half and there's no county grounds going to be more than half full for any of these club matches anyway. So it doesn't affect GEA. By the time the GEA want that, it could be February and we could all be locked in our houses again. Who knows the way these things are going. The big thing, Niall, is that there's been no word on dressing rooms. So, like, I mean, I was on to the GEA about this and they said they hadn't heard anything. Do you know what I mean? They haven't heard anything. Like, I mean, this for me, this is not on. So if they're waiting for direction from the government to do the right thing, right, to open the dress rooms, it's freezing now. It's back freezing. We went through about a week there of nice enough mild weather. It's back freezing now. And teams have no... In fact, I heard anecdotally that Laois clubs involved in the hurling this weekend have been told there'll be no dress rooms this weekend. Like, I mean, what's going on here? And can the right thing not be done? Can common sense, and there are examples from all over the country of clubs completely disregarding this and allowing teams use the dressing room. And I would be very proud of them, because this is total bullshit and it shouldn't be allowed to go on any longer.
So there'll be lads going to nightclubs, they're opening on Friday night, and on Sunday morning when they're training they won't be allowed into their dressing rooms.
Yeah.
Maybe they should start dancing in the dressing rooms or something and it might be safe then.
Someone else said tug out in the local dance floor. And go down to the match.
But it is time, isn't it, that the GA, like, if they're waiting, like, they've been waiting on the government and they're kind of standing on ceremony waiting for them.
Yeah.
It's time that they just kind of took the lead now and stood up for their members and just said, like, we're going to do this now. Because as we've seen with the restriction announcement, we won't get into it about the nightclubs and stuff like that, but not much of that makes sense. Like, so the GA just need to stand up and make their point now and let the dressing rooms opened, like.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, I mean, and I think, like we said before, and I'll go off this point now, a year ago they got so much PR for keeping people safe. now people want to keep people safe by opening the restrooms. Or did GAA need to catch up with that? And from a PR point of view, open the dressing rooms. Let people talk out inside. Like, I mean, we won't say it anymore on the show. Tommy Walsh is retired, Lee. A freak of nature, you would call this fella, 2008, 2009. Come out of minor, monster of a man. He was very, very fast. He was huge. He could catch over his head. He had left and right. He was an incredibly accurate player, you know, back then. Went to St Kilda. Went to Sydney Swans and St Kilda. St Kilda first. And made shit of his hamstring. He tore it off the bone. You know, the worst hamstring injury, which that kind of put pay to his Aussie Rules career. Then came back for Kerry. Had slowed down a good bit when he came back. Still influential enough, but not that kind of swashbuckling, Jesus, like a beast of a man back in 2008.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget about the sort of impact that Tommy Walsh had.
Yeah.
It was sort of like David Clifford-esque, actually. I mean, because... And when you think about it, it was nearly more impressive because the team he broke onto in like 2007, 2008, you know, like, I mean, it had the Gooch, it had Kieran Donaghy, it had Paul Galvin and stuff. And he's like 20 years old, straight into that team, yeah. And a mainstay in that team. And what an impact he was. That 2008 season, him and Kieran Donaghy just terrorized everyone. They were called the Twin Towers, and anyone they came up against, like, he was just unstoppable. And they actually played Tyrone in that final in 2008, and Mickey Hart was so obsessed with the whole Twin Towers and with Tommy Walsh in particular that he put Justin McMahon and Joe McMahon on both of them, because they were the closest that they had that could match that sort of like physical prowess. And then in the A and B games, they would have like Collie Holmes, Sean Kavanagh marking them. And then he even started throwing up the two goalkeepers to come up just to throw the high ball under them and see, just to get used to what it'd be like to mark them.
Yeah.
Now they did do a good job in that final, but I'm just saying that's how much respect that Mickey had for him, you know, and him only 20 years old. Now the next year he came back again, he won the All-Ireland, got Young Player of the Year. And it just looked, I'm sure Gary people thought like how they see David Clifford now in terms of like, well, he's going to play for us for years and he's going to be this brilliant always. But like you say, he went off, you know, he played AFL, he suffered a really, really bad injury, that hamstring off the bone. Like that's really what affected Michael Owen's career. It happened him like when he was at Liverpool, and you know, as soon as he lost that yard of pace, and then he was never the same again. Tommy Walsh did very good in terms of he's always going to be influential. He had to change his role. He became an impact sub, and he still strike fear into anyone who coming up against the Kerry team. And you're seeing him coming off the bench against Tyrone in the semi-final this year. I seen him coming off the bench and I was scared. I was just sort of like, God, he's just such a menace. And he, you know, you throw the ball into him and it could be really chaotic and he could pull them out of it. Now, I know he missed that point right at the end. It sort of maybe could have equalized it and stuff. But yeah, I mean, with Jack O'Connor, the manager, and that's who he played his best football under, I thought he might have stayed on a little while, but he maybe just wasn't willing to, you know, give that sort of commitment, knowing full well that it would be an impact role more than anything.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Because you would think maybe Jack O'Connor might be kind of fond of the 14 kind of high ball option. But obviously, you wouldn't know. Tommy Walsh could have had a conversation with him. Maybe Tommy Walsh has just had enough. Like, he kind of did make that big comeback, you know, two or three years ago now. You know, to come back and give it another go, and maybe 3 years is enough of a commitment for him. Terrible nice fella Tommy Walsh is. I've met him on a few occasions, and all the best to him. A fantastic player, great player to watch. And you're right, I do take that point, Lee, that especially even maybe people your age, maybe not Julie, because you would have watched that 2008 season very, very closely, you know, with Tyrone obviously winning. But Tommy Walsh was wow. Just, he's like the Terminator. Like, he was just, you know, on another level. And then you're being told, oh, he's a forward. Yeah, he's playing the forwards, but his best position is midfield. And you're thinking he's the new Darragh O'Shea. And this lad, it's just incredible. And then we lost him to Aussie Rules. And it's like, we're being honest, he didn't come back the same player. Still came back an effective player, but he wasn't as agile, you know, as he was before he left. But you think of him, the size he is, a little bit less, a little bit leaner, with incredible pace. And just running at lads. He liked going at lads, which is just, and going past them for someone that big. Yeah, so it was interesting how his career turned out. He had an excellent career. Like, he's two All-Irelands. Other bit of news this week is Keane O'Neill is the new Galway coach. Keane O'Neill is fairly well travelled, lads. Jesus. Like, he's been with Kerry. He's been with the Tipperary Hurlers. He's managed Kildare. He's been with Mayo. He's been with Cork most recently. And I find it funny with these coaches in that, you get a reputation as a coach. Like, his reputation now shouldn't be fantastic. You know, he's in with Cork, hasn't had two good years in there at all, but he's still highly rated enough. With Kildare, things went pear-shaped with him, but he still is highly rated enough. You know, like, I mean, he did pretty well with the Mayo footballers, Kerry footballers. Like, the thing about coaches, which I find interesting, is, like, are you a coach that warms the team up and kind of a fitness coach, which a lot of these lads are, they're great at drills and whatever, but they can't tell you how to play the game? Or are you a coach like a Jim McGuinness style coach who gets down a Paul Kinnerk in hurling, who gets down in the training field and talks you through the way you want the team to play? Say, this is what the ball we want going in, work on it. This is the way we want you playing in the defence, breaking out of pace, work on it. They're coaches I like. That's what I call a coach. I think anyone get a team fit. Mick O'Dwyer used to get us fit sending us on bloody 30 laps a night. I think that's overblown. I know variety and making the training enjoyable is important, but isn't playing a match the most enjoyable thing you'll ever do at training? So, like, I mean, let's not get over kind of carried away with these coaches that are good at getting you fit and good at making training, you know, having a variety to training. How about the coaches like Kinnerk, like Jim McGuinness? Maybe Keane O'Neill can do this, but the guys who spend the night talking you through your game plan and playing a match, and if you're not playing the way he wants you to play, blow the whistle. Why'd you do that? They're the coaches I have time for, Niall. Like, I mean, I'm not sure what type of coach Keane O'Neill is. He has been a manager, I suppose, so maybe he can do a bit of both.
Yeah, I'd say he's a coach, like, with nearly, at this stage, a bit of everything going on. Like,
he started off strength and conditioning kind of coach.
Yeah, and when Tip won the All-Ireland in 2010, his title, he was the fitness coach, like, so he was just getting the team in top physical fitness. But, like, yeah, he's been around, like, from going from there to becoming a manager. Like, it's not the kind of traditional path that a coach would follow. So, like, he has lots of different experience in lots of different kind of jobs and lots of different areas. And I suppose for Galway, they're just hoping that the experience is good experience and that it stands to him and that he will do a good job with them. Like,
yeah, we even had different managers I've had with Laois down through the years, and they'd have coaches in under them. And sometimes one coach might be a defensive coach and the other lad would be an attacking coach, and one would go away and work with the defenders sometimes, another work with the attackers and stuff. But it was never joined up. Like, the two aren't two separate things. Like, one has to, they join in the middle. And that's your game plan, how you get from one to the other and where the other needs to be. Because if you're talking about your defenders, where's your half forward line, Amity? Do you want your half forward line to be still up there? They will be up there if you're only working with the forwards. And the same with defenders. How does this marry into the whole game plan? Do you get me, Lee? A lot of the time these lads will have a selector that works with the backs and where, and there's never kind of this one big connection between the whole thing that Paul Kinnerk or Jim McGuinness can put on a team and practice the whole thing and say, lads, it's not perfect. Go out and play the game the way, you know, you make up your own mind on the field, but this is the way we're trying, you know, this is the way we want to play.
Yeah, no, completely. I think with GA coaches especially, they become a little bit obsessed with trying to find the next new philosophy. And so they look to other sports. And it's always very good to get inspiration from different sports and different things. But that's very American football. You know, you take the positions and then they train on their own and you split the two teams and divide them all together. And then they come together on match day. And I think that's just sort of a borrowed philosophy. It never really made sense to me because it's a team sport. Sometimes, especially in the modern game, you know, the transition from back to attack and back again is so fluid. Everyone knows their role and their job in that, and they're quite often doing both, depending on what position that you're at. In terms of and there's lots of ways you can be a coach. I don't know what way Keane is. I suppose if a manager, like you say, has a certain type of style of play, maybe they could have a coach to lean on in the terms of, I want to play football this way. I want to play this real running game. Everything's through the hands, and we need them to be fit and fast, and I'll go forward and move back in the same motion. And then it's up to that coach to then come up with the drills and the plans for that based on the manager's wishes. You know, he puts in the actual groundwork under the guidance of the manager. To me, that sort of works well as a coach. That makes a lot of sense. But then you have coaches like, our manager coaches like Rory Gallagher, who are on, you know, in the middle of the field, and they're doing, you know, barking orders and doing everything from managing it, getting the right type. But, you know, he's a bit of, I think he's like, you know, OCD, pure perfectionist, that makes sure everything's done correctly. There's lots of different ways to do it. I couldn't really say what way Keane is, but no, definitely not the splitting between backs and attacks and everything else. The only position that should have its own individual training is a goalkeeper, because obviously they have different things that they need to work on.
Yeah, they're on individual training. And then if you go in to, as a coach under a manager, and you've got some great ideas and you're coaching the team pretty well, he gets all the credit for everything you're doing. Because as far as I'm concerned, your game plan and the coaching is the most important, most important thing. Another way, you go in and, you know, you're not the best coach in the world. Your manager's pretty good and you're dragging the bat. Like, I don't know. I think the manager and the coach, the perfect scenario is the Jim McGuinness and Rory Gallagher, where they're actually doing the two together. But then are you missing out on the fella who kind of overlooks everything, you know, because you're stuck down in the middle of it. It's definitely a difficult dynamic, but absolutely the manager and the coach have to be 100% on the same wavelength, have to believe in the game plan, because you can't tell a coach, come in here and do so, and the coach, Jesus, you know, I don't really, you know, that's not, well, we'll do it, but, you know, you don't believe in it. You have to be on the same page. Which is really important. Have you something to say on that, Dave?
Well, like I say, that's the most important thing, as you said, Wooly, is that they're on the same wavelength. Like, in that, like I'd say, it could be difficult at times being a coach if like, just take say like Stephen Rochford working under Declan Bonner, like he'd probably have his own ideas, and like maybe he wants to play a different way, maybe they want to play the same way, but like it's two personalities coming together, and I'd say oftentimes there could be a clash between the manager and the coach, because like the coach is obviously a very skilled individual, but the manager is the boss at the end of the day, like, so they're going to make the calls.
Well, that's the thing, and like, I mean, I don't know, I would just hate to be in a manager setup, not being able to do the things the way I want to do them, and my reputation being affected by that, you know what I mean? I don't know, I think it's manager or nothing, and I'd be a dictator. I'd have no selectors, I'd do the coaching myself, and I'd fall out with half the panel 3 months in. No, I would definitely need some selectors to calm me down at times. Last story on this, lads, is Shane Walsh. He's calling for a TMO. Now, we know Shane Walsh, you were talking to him yesterday, and I'll start here with you. Like, we know why he's saying this. So he got bundled to the ground against Galway. Now, I've seen the video of this. Shane Walsh pulled the Mayo player. Some people say it's Páraic O'Hara, some people saying Lee Keegan. It looked like Lee Keegan to me. He pulled the Mayo player back, and the Mayo player got him and flipped him onto the ground. Now, the two of them fell to the ground together. Shane Walsh had a terrible injury. I don't think there was any intent in it. I think if Shane Walsh wants to kind of give out about, you know, this kind of cynical stuff, he shouldn't have been pulling jersey, stopping his man going up the field. Shane Walsh is probably the fastest player in the whole country. Why are you doing that? Why are you initiate? You're the brilliant class forward. Why are you initiating something that a defender is more than happy to get into this wrestling match with you? I'd have Shane have a look at himself in the mirror. I completely disagree with TMOs. I don't understand the point of them. We literally have two umpires standing behind that thing. What are they doing? What's the linesman doing? And they say, oh, we need more eyes on the game. There's 2, 4, 6, 8 umpire eyes, never used or rarely used. And then you have another 4 on the sideline, 8 and 4, 12, and 2 of the referee. 14 eyes in that match, and you want another one. Is that not enough?
Yeah. Well,
you want another pair now, not just one.
Well, yeah, I don't think the TMO, like, it, when you see it in soccer, it's like every, you know, the excitement nearly of a game is that you kind of get away with the odd little thing, and you're kind of waiting on, did the whistle go? It didn't go right, we're away. When you're watching a soccer game now, you're just waiting for everything to be pulled back to the VAR, and it's just, it takes the excitement sort of out of it.
You won't accept any mistake. You're like, why didn't that go? You know, and some people don't agree even on them. So half the people say that should have gone to VAR. The other people say it wouldn't. I think VAR's messed it up soccer completely. And then you've got the absolutely disgraceful dynamic of I've been over to watch Everton several times. And on the Gladys Street end, when Everton score, it's the best bloody minute of your life. You go crazy and it's mental. It's like being in a mosh pit. And then by the time you calm down, that goal didn't stand. Give me a break. That's not sport.
Yeah, like it kind of it just takes away from the real like excitement of it and the buzz of something just happening in the moment. Like, it just takes away from the moment, and like people have kind of been calling for the TMO, but they'll be calling for the TMO every time something a little bit controversial happens, and it just, I don't think it would really go well. And you know, like I was as you said, I was talking to Shane Walsh yesterday, and I have to say, of all the inter-county players I've ever interviewed. He was nearly the most chatty of anyone. Like, I asked him, I think it was two questions, and he was nearly going on for 10 minutes. Just a great talker. But he kind of brought up the TMO thing. It was about, he was talking about club GA and how at times there'd be lads sent out. And I'd say he would get this. I think he plays intermediate football, where lads are just taking him down the whole time. And I don't think the TMO thing came exactly from the O'Hara or Keegan
incident, right?
I don't think we're going to get TMO in club GA for a long time.
No,
anyway.
It's just not going to happen. And I suppose that's for donkey's years, the best player at club level is targeted. I got it literally all my career. And you just deal with this. I'm sure Shane's well able to deal with it. I don't know, because I've seen, I think it was Mark O'Shea during the summer was on about a TMO, and some people going on about it. I don't know, Lee. I personally, I would hate it. For the good it would do, you'd be going to it too often maybe, and some incidents, when you analyse it and slow it down, people can't agree on it. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I mean, if you can't agree on it on the Sunday game, two pundits, I might disagree with what they were saying. That was a sending off. Jeez, I didn't look it to me, lads. Sure, if you can't, a lot of these things you can't necessarily agree on. Just let the referee decide on it.
Yeah, that's it. In some cases, it can undermine the referee's decision, because no matter what it is, a foul or a point or whatever it is, it's all pretty objective. So just because you slow it down, it doesn't make it any less objective. It's up to someone to make a decision based on what you're viewing, and that decision could be different to someone else. Now, but the interesting thing about TMO is that, like, Croke Park actually already have it. Me and the girlfriend went to Dublin earlier on in the summer, and we had time to kill, so we went and did the Croke Park tour, and the tour guide was showing us all around, and he was talking about how only recently he got asked to do hockey during the matches. And he said they can see everything up there. They can see off the ball incidents and everything, but they're not allowed to call the referee at all on it. They have no, like, say in it or whatever. It's only purely for incidents with hockey.
Right.
But, so it actually is there and it's in place. And if it was not maybe a Turkey, but a match official, you know, it would actually be an easy enough transition to do. That's not to say they should do it. It's just, it actually wouldn't be the most impossible thing ever, because it sort of half is in place. I would absolutely hate to see it in terms of, like, every tackle and then every goal. And then, because it'll be, you score a goal, but then you pull it back because in the build-up of the goal, pulled someone's jersey.
Yeah.
And that would be a real nightmare. But, like, I mean, there may be something in, like, every red card should be viewed, and maybe a double check, and if they can watch it, that's fine. You know, but, like, nothing to do with scores or anything that might slow the game down in that. Because a red card, you know, that's a very serious offence. Someone's obviously done something so extreme in terms of bending the rules that they maybe do deserve a review, because it's going to be reviewed anyway afterwards in terms of their suspension. So if you could get that sorted on the pitch, that wouldn't be the worst in the world. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Like, yeah, it's a good point to bring up before we finish up. Like, I mean, there's nothing more kind of, you know, annoying in a rugby match. You might see one of the best tries you've ever seen, and then a TMO is called, and it's actually, it's cancelled, because there was a tiny slight forward pass about five passes before this brilliant try was. Oh my God, like, imagine the Cara Finn. Remember the brilliant Cara Finn goal in the All-Ireland Club Final, the brilliant hand pass goal? Imagine a TMO was called for that, and I was seeing that the first hand pass in that was a slight throw. No, lads, TMO says, you know, we have to pull it back. You know, I think it would be a disaster in the GA. Right, we'll leave it there for part one, lads. Oh, before I go, any of you haven't, there's not much to say on this other than Dublin announced their alternate jersey. Usually nothing special about this, but they have modelled it on the Argentina jersey. So if you haven't seen this jersey yet, it's one of the nicest jerseys I've ever seen. It's basically the Argentina jersey in GAA form, and it's the Dublin light blue. It's the same colours, and it's a Dublin jersey. I'm extremely jealous, and I will be buying one. It just has to be done. So we could all be. It's bad enough people in Kildare and Meath giving out about children wearing Dublin jerseys, you know, with the Dublin parents. Now they have to pull out incredible jerseys like this. So it's definitely going to keep happening. All right, we'll leave it there for part one, lads. I'm coming back with Conor Heenahan, and we're going to do some countdown to Congress. So I'm pulling you in for the Congress chat, Conor, because I think the two lads are kind of fed up with it a little bit. I'm not fed up with it at all. If anything, my excitement is getting even higher as we're 2 days out from this absolutely huge decision. Congress is, I think it's 11 o'clock until 2 o'clock on Saturday. The situation we stand at now, Conor, is there's 183 votes on Saturday. we need 110 votes. I feel like there's a general election, only I'd never any interest in politics. I finally know what this buzz feels like.
It really reminds me of the US presidential election, Willie, particularly. not maybe the Irish one. Going back to November time where you're glued into CNN and you see the map of America and you have all the states colored in different codes. I actually saw a map like that this morning, which had indicated the counties that were in favor, come out in favor of proposal B, and those who hadn't. And then there was a different color then for those who were letting their delegates speak for themselves at Congress on Saturday. So as much as I suppose like you tire of all the procedural talk around it that's gone on for months and months, now it's the exciting time. Now we're only a couple of days out. So, you know, I'll be glued to Twitter and awarding yourself come Saturday, no doubt.
That's the thing. The huge one here that stands out to me when you look at the voting is that the overseas counties, county boards, have 38 out of the 183 votes, which is huge. And sometimes you don't even think of them. I'm glued to the 32 counties. And like you said, there is a map. Off the Ball AM did one, and you're looking at it and you're seeing who's doing what. Only two counties have come out and said no so far. But it looks like every single Ulster province is going to vote no. And I think that can be absorbed, because that doesn't even have the same amount of voting as the entire province of Ulster. The overseas have more votes.
Overseas, if I'm right in saying, have more than a third of the votes of the rest that are spread across the 32 counties. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
I think I'm right in saying that. So you'd imagine that's, you know, that lobby, that vote could be hugely. I was amazed when I found out, because I was digging obviously into the numbers this morning, but I was amazed that they had that amount of influence. Now, hopefully for supporters of Proposal B, like myself and yourself, Willie, they have the right influence. But of course, I have to remember that the president of the current president of GAA is coming from an overseas background as well. So if he's, you know, if he wants to be very strong about it, he's potentially been lobbying a couple of people as well that'll hopefully vote in that favor. So it is good to know that, though, because there was a danger there. You're hearing a lot of people this week coming out, you know, against Proposal B in that kind of way. So that there's a kind of there's that daunting feeling that, you know, you're afraid that it's not going to pass, and maybe not going to pass by a significant margin. But that kind of, when you see the numbers on the overseas vote and you hear some of the sentiments coming out of some influential people this week, it's kind of veering it a bit in the other direction.
So overseas have 38 votes, past presidents have 7. Then you have all the counties have different ones based off how many clubs they have, you know. So like, I mean, it is a big mix. Central Council then have some votes in around 20, I think Central Council is. And that's kind of how it's split. But there's been a lot of counties so far. I think 13 counties have come out in favour of Plan B. Only two, like I said, Armagh and Fermanagh, have come out publicly against it. We have the four counties, which are Kerry, Laois, Limerick and Waterford, that are leaving it up to their delegates on the day. Now, I don't know what to think of this. Like, I mean, it's really, really disappointing. In one way, someone told me they're playing politics with their provincial council. They don't want to upset them. And then in another way, you'd wonder, are they worried about coming out against Proposal B? You know, are they worried about backing Proposal B? I can't comprehend, Conor, if Congress is supposed to be democratic and the process that's supposed to happen here is that club delegates go into a county board meeting, they take a vote, and the county come up, vote and democratically decide which way we're going to go based on the views of our clubs. And before the club delegate even arrives to the county board meeting, they have to have a vote at their own club level. And their club level committee members have to talk to their club members and see how they're thinking, and it goes way, way down. Now, this never does happen, Conor. That, like, this true process never happens. But, you know, at the very least, you would imagine if you're going through the democratic process, the county board takes a vote and the Congress delegate carries that mandated vote to the Congress and votes that way. The idea a county board would just defer to what the Congress delegate want on the day, I can't get my head around it. That's not democracy. Yeah. And the excuse Laois used, which is my county, now I'd be confident enough the delegates in Laois will go with Plan B. But at the same time, the excuse the chairman came up with, there might be amendments on the day. Like, I mean, you either think this is a good concept or it's not. There'd be no amendments on the day that is going to dramatically change anything here.
But am I right in saying then, Willie, that there's no amendments will be voted on? So, like, you know, what you have with Proposal B, as it is now, is what you'll be voting on. Do you know what I mean? I'm pretty sure I say that and then it's voted in. Then potential amendments could be looked at. I think they might be talked about or raised from the floor on Saturday. But what you're actually voting on will be what you know about already. So like that seems to me, if I'm right in saying that, that just seems like a weak excuse. And it also, I think that stands by those counties. It's just very disappointing to me. Like, you know, it's just, as you said, there's a system that you work to, you know, and this is how you arrive on how you decide on your vote at Congress. So to just put it down to the individual whim, you know, of your delegate on the day, it just seems a bit weak to me. And you know, on the back of that, Willie, as well, is that, of course, the vote, it's not transparent. You're not going to find out how, you know, which way everybody voted. And to me, I would fear then that because of that, because their own county boards have been so indecisive, you know, in not coming out either in favor or against, that the delegates themselves are going to be indecisive. And I would say that anyone that's indecisive going into a vote like this will just vote for the consensus or the status quo, you know, for fear of, you know, they'll say that they don't know enough about proposal B or what's going to come down the line, even though that to me isn't a valid excuse either.
Well, the great thing about it is that the president and the director general, so Larry McCarthy and Tom Ryan, have rode in behind Plan B. That was at a media briefing yesterday. And like, I mean, Larry McCarthy, like, whether they're campaigning for this or not, they'll probably speak at Congress, you know, and if they speak, you know, for proposal B, they will swing those delegates that are going to make up their own mind on the day, you'd imagine. Larry McCarthy said, "I said at Congress in February that I thought it should be, that we thought we should be bold in terms of considering this report. That hasn't changed. So I'd like to see us being bold in terms of our adoption to this report. I would like to see it come in. If we have to tweak it, we will tweak it. I'm not immune to tweaking. If there's something not right with it, if something is not working, we'll definitely tweak it." You know, like, I mean, I love that attitude. Like, let's bring this in, right? And if there's a situation where there's a little anomaly, like some people are complaining that there's only 5 out of Division 1 and not 6, what's wrong with tweaking that? Now, I wouldn't be in agreement with that. Or, you know, the situation where the Talton Cup, there's a serious anomaly that will be tweaked. And this was an oversight, is that the Talton Cup winners get promoted even if they had been relegated, which, you know, is just clearly silly. And that seems to be an oversight. Mm. I had that wrong a couple of weeks ago. Brian McAvoy actually had it right. These are little tweaks that can be ironed out, get it perfect and get it working well. But we won't know what to tweak without seeing it for a year. You know, so I was impressed with Larry McCarthy's attitude. I had him maybe pegged a little bit wrong, maybe a little bit opposed to change. But that's always my attitude. This looks good. It looks exciting. Maybe it's not perfect. Let's fix the imperfections, you know? Like, I mean, why would there be so much opposition to that?
Yeah, I think it's really important that he said that, Willie, as well, because the attitude that I'm detecting amongst a lot of people that are opposed to Proposal B was that, well, if this comes in, well, then that's it. Do you know what I mean? That it can't be changed down the line. I was reading John Prenti there. John Prenti, obviously Secretary to Connacht Council, Mayo man as well. And he used an analogy. He said, like, it's, you know, it's like an architect telling you there might be a problem 5 years down the line, you know. So if it's going to be a problem 5 years down the line, why not fix it now, was his kind of attitude. Do you know what I mean? So if Proposal B is going to be a problem down the line, why not fix it now? But the thing about this is, if the debate about this whole thing is shown as Hanton and such, you will never, ever arrive on a perfect solution, ever. You know, like, there's not one catch-all proposal that's going to satisfy every GAA fan or every Congress delegate. That's just the way it is. But, like, what we have now is something that we can work with that, in my opinion, as an advocate of Proposal B, is better than the current system. So use that as your starting point. Use Proposal B as your starting point and tweak it, rather than use the status quo and, you know, that we've been trying to tweak for ages and still hasn't worked, in my opinion. So when you're hearing this, you know, it's Larry McCarthy saying this. It's not anybody. It's the president of GAA saying, if this is not working, we'll tweak it. That should put the, you know, put some minds at rest to think that if this is coming in next year, that's it, and you can't, that's it, and there's no changes to it. If it's not working, make those changes and make it work. So, like, to hear him come out on that, and just to hear him talk about it, I know he said it previously about being bold, but bold is the word here. Do you know, bold, be ambitious, change is needed. So be, you know, take a risk and see what happens.
Yeah, I think Prenti wouldn't build a house at all. That's probably what his solution would be. What's the story with Mayo then? James Horan surprised me, I have to say. He came out speaking against it. You know, a lot of these counties are, and you can't really blame them in a lot of ways, they're looking at their own self-interest, and they're looking at their own self-interest as in what's going to happen me next year. They're not thinking of in 10 years time we could be in Division 3, this would be, you know, what's better for the association across 32 counties. It all seems to be like Armagh voting against it. They've just got to Division 1 in the league. They have a chance of winning an Ulster. Next year, they probably don't want this. They'd like to build on what they did this year. But Armagh, you've just come from Division 3. Do you know what I mean? Why can't Armagh think of the bigger picture? I don't want to be too critical. The sounds coming out of Mayo have been negative against it with Prenti and with James Horan. My word is that the Dublin footballers want it, and the Dublin footballers have an easy route to the All-Ireland every year, and they still want what's right. Kerry the same. I hear nothing out of Mayo. Not one Mayo player is saying has come out that I have read. Maybe you can... maybe you can let us know about that. Darren Hughes from Monaghan has come out against it. And I can understand where Darren Hughes is coming from. He doesn't want to be sixth in Division 1 and not make the quarterfinals. You see, I can't understand this idea people want six from Division 1. If you have six qualifying from Division 1, for the last good few years until Armagh booked the trend, you've kind of had Kildare, Roscommon, you've had Cavan, Roscommon. The two in Division 1 that go back to Division 2 have been pretty obvious. So if people want this league-based championship to be, the league part to be a championship, there has to be a cutthroat element. So yes, at Monaghan or a Mayo or a Donegal or some big county doesn't get to the quarters. If you go with six in Division 1 getting through, well then a lot of these counties could, you know, could be decided two games before, you know, that they're going through. Whereas if you throw that fifth in there, it could drag in third and fourth, you know, into that kind of fight for it. It completely goes against the league being cutthroat championship. And I think for that reason, six should not be allowed. But I'm wondering, is Mayo's concern being that sixth team in Division 1? And Mayo have been in the last two All-Ireland finals. Should Mayo even be thinking like that?
No, well, when you kind of said it there, like self-interest was the key. Well, when I'm looking, if I'm looking at this selfishly from a Mayo point of view, and to be honest, as you've kind of hinted at, most people are looking at this selfishly, you know, purely in self-interest. And they're purely looking at it in terms of most recently, you know, and using the most recent years as a kind of a starting point for what might happen in the next few years under the current system, right? So if you're looking at Mayo been an All-Ireland final 6 of the last 10 years, right? Only one year Mayo didn't make an All-Ireland semi-final. So the system clearly works for Mayo. But I still think proposal B is better for the championship as a whole, and I'd like to think more people would think that way. But even out that, so I've heard no players from Mayo come out either in favor or against it. I did hear the James Horan interview, kind of, you know, it didn't really come out all guns blazing against it. You could tell if he was asked to vote, he wouldn't vote for proposal B. The other one was Dermot Butler, who was the secretary, Mayo County Board, and he basically used the comparison. He says, if the league championship format is adopted in its current form, Mayo can win the Connacht title and not compete for Sam Maguire. So he's using that as the provincial championships being standalone. But the main thing for me, how many times have we been struggling for league survival on the last day of the league, yet reached the final stages of the championship? That would not be possible. What Dermot is forgetting there is that, like, the league has been completely different for Mayo than the championship. This has been well documented. I mean, Mayo have had players based in Dublin that are, you know, not training with the rest of the team during the week, whereas for championship, you know, they make sure to train collectively. So it's not as if, like, the circumstances are completely different. But yeah, I suppose
But Conor, Mayo try like 30 different players during the league. You know, they wouldn't that in the league championship.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But I suppose the overriding point is that's why Mayo are looking at it. If you're asking me why Mayo are looking at saying no to proposal B, that's exactly why, because they're looking at this. They're saying, well, we get to All-Ireland finals, you know, most years. We get to All-Ireland semi-finals 9 times out of 10. Do you know what I mean? So that's why they're thinking about saying no at the moment. I would prefer a bigger picture, you know, saying, well, what's good for the championship as a whole? But the reality is, Willie, is that most counties, as you've hinted with Armagh, you hinted with Monaghan, will be looking at this from a self-interest point of view.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely it. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, Mayo might make semi-finals, but like, other than a huge run through the qualifiers, this is the thing, Monaghan or Mayo, right? And we're only talking about Division 1 here because this is where the issue with maybe the Mayo, I see it as a very defeatist attitude. Who says Monaghan can't get to the top five in Division 1 or Mayo? Who says that there's literally not a kick of a ball between Mayo, Monaghan, Donegal, Tyrone and these teams? I know Tyrone are all Ireland champions, but like, there's not. So why can't you make that top five? And if you don't make the top five after seven championship games, four of them at home for some counties and three away, seven championship in mid-summer. See, this is the thing I don't understand about Monaghan. You think Monaghan were making All-Ireland quarterfinals every year. They're not. They're not. They'll have seven guaranteed championship matches at home in Clonus, or four at home in Clonus, alternate years, and three at home on other years, and three or four on the road. They've had a brilliant summer if they don't get to the top five. They've had an unbelievable championship summer. And they just might scrape in one year, they might not scrape in, and they'll have an All-Ireland quarterfinal in Croke Park. Monaghan aren't in the quarterfinals every year. But under the old system and under the new system, I wouldn't back against Monaghan making the top five every second year. Would you?
No. I suppose I'd probably be using their league performance as a barometer more so than, you know, and that's, given what we've just said about Mayo, that might be unfair. But my whole thing on that, Willie, is that, like, the amount of, I don't think you can crib. If you have seven championship games and you don't finish in the top five, you don't deserve, you haven't deserved to finish in the top five. No. Do you know what I mean? And the other argument that kind of bothers me, maybe we'll get to this, is that, like, some people are saying, now I get this to a certain degree, right? That, like, the bottom three teams in Division One, you know, won't be in a quarterfinal, whereas the winners of Division Four will be in a preliminary quarterfinal under the Proposal B system, right? But the other thing is, like, well, but you're compared to what you have now. Do you know, Donegal could get knocked out by Tyrone in a preliminary round in Ulster. Do you know, but then if you look at that compared to the Munster Championship, Tipperary might get into a Munster final having beaten Limerick. Do you know, so like, I think there's people have been coming out very strongly with that argument. Whereas I think, well, if you compare it to the current system, there's flaws everywhere. I think they're just probably making too big a deal at that point. But I would go back to that and I'd say, I haven't liked that argument about the teams in Division One, because that, to me, it's championship. If you can't make the top five, top five, that's not, you know, not even in the bottom half. You can be in the bottom half and still qualify for the latter stages. That argument doesn't sit right.
Yeah, no, me too. And look, I mean, if you're being fair to every county, you have to look at it relatively. And relatively, I would argue it's harder for counties to top Division 4 or top Division 3 than it is to come fifth in Division 1 for a Division 1 team. It's all relative. And that's what the interest of fairness and giving every county a chance to win Sam Maguire. Anyway, the merits of B have been discussed a lot. I'm just very interested in the politics of it, Conor. And it's so close. From people I talk to, it's very, very hard to call. Like, I mean, 60%. Imagine it gets 55 and we don't get this, you know, because some so-and-so went his own way. And like, it's just so close that you just don't know. And all of the Ulster counties, apparently, like, I mean, there was a meeting on Tuesday and all of the delegates were against. All of the Ulster delegates from all of the counties were against B. And the Ulster Council is putting a lot of pressure on individual counties of what's going to be filtered down and what they're going to get. So, like, I mean, the reality is, unless delegates go rogue, and we always give out about them going rogue, but I'll take them going rogue if they're going if they're going rogue the way I want. Isn't that a terrible thing to say on me giving out about the politics? Like, but I mean, unless Ulster County, Ulster delegates go rogue, as it isn't mad, the Ulster delegates would be going rogue by following the mandate of their county board. Do you know what I mean? Isn't it weird?
Yeah, and not only that, I was reading this morning, Willie, that the Fermanagh manager has, Fermanagh are one of the counties that have come out publicly against Proposal B, and their manager is saying it's a no-brainer for that, you know, Fermanagh should be in Proposal B. So, yeah, no, it's a I think what you need to do, you need to turn up outside Congress on Saturday and start lobbying some of these lads, Willie, because it could come down to that close. And like, what I'd love to see, even though I was just thinking about it now, is like, some said they should broadcast the countdown live.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, as the votes come in, and, you know, yes on one, or, you know, how, you know, have a pie chart or something with as the votes tally and how close we're getting to the the magical 110, is it, or 109 or 110, yeah. I think, or the 60%, I think, because that'd be box office TV. And when have you ever said that Congress is box office TV?
Well, that's it. You were mentioned at the US presidential election. You said you were watching on CNN. I was watching on Fox. So, like, I mean, we were just watching two different cable. I'm only joking. But the thing is, I would watch if RTE did a live count of this. I would absolutely watch. It's that big that you would like to know what it's like as the votes are being tallied, or can we get to that magical, you know, 110 votes and get it over the line. I'd be interested to see who speaks at Congress. This Congress, I could have got accreditation for it there, and I don't know if I'd have the patience, you know, to be there. And, you know, you might, but I'd be very interested in watching it live streamed.
Yeah, no, 100%. And because it's a special, you know, it's a special Congress, you know what I mean? There's not going to be, with all due respect to people, you know, who go to Congresses and maybe who like going to Congresses, there's a lot of procedural talk that, you know, mightn't be the most kind of entertaining for everybody else. But I've never seen as much, that I can, no, obviously recency bias is a big deal. So maybe there has been before and I can't remember, but this is the most excitement about a decision in the GAA that I can remember for a long time, you know? So I'd say it's probably too late at this stage, but I'd say there's certainly scope to do some sort of CNN, Fox, whatever way you want it, Willie style broadcast from Congress this weekend.
Whatever your leanings is, or whatever the leanings you're accused of having, are. But that's
all
it.
Here's Fox, and the rest of the country is CNN.
So, like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. We'll wrap it up on this. This is why I'm so excited about it. I think I started in the media doing bits for Off the Ball 2011. Oh, before I even did that, I think it was 2013, maybe. I went on a GPA 2011. I was still working in the IFSC in finance. I went on a GPA committee, and the committee in 2011 was to think up of championship reforms and championship restructures to fix this championship. 10 years, Connor, this is in the making. I can't even remember the restructure I had at the time. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was an All-Ireland Cup. And, you know, even your own restructures kind of, you know, develop and get better as the time goes on, as you think about it more. So 10 years in the making to change the structure, to give inter-county players more championship matches, a better structure, a fairer structure. And it all boils down to between 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock on 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock on Saturday. I don't know. I'm getting goosebumps already here thinking about it, Connor. I don't know what I'm going to do if it doesn't get through.
I didn't want to quell your enthusiasm now, or Willie, or anything like that, because obviously, listen, you've personal investment and you've pushed this harder than anybody, given that it is the Willie Championship after all. But I would just hope that, because listen, there is a strong chance that it's not going to go through. But that, like, you know, if it doesn't, that's not the end of, you know, that we haven't stopped looking for solutions.
That's not the end of the GAA hour, I thought you were going to say.
Not at all. The GAA hour, live long and prosper. But no, that it's not the end of the GAA looking for solutions to this. You've been on it, but you just said it there, Willie, 10 years when it's been the constant source of discussion, to the extent that on the show, you know, you've said championship structures, we're not going to get into that because it's such a kind of thorny topic and so much has been said about it that you can't just talk about it all the time. So this is it. Listen, it's a seismic moment for the GAA, but I do hope that if it doesn't go the way we want it to on Saturday, that it's not the end of the discussion and that we'll continue to look for a solution that is better than, in my opinion, what we have at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. Great stuff, Connor. Thanks very much. We'll leave it there and we will be back. Monday is a bank holiday. I think we'll be back on Tuesday with a show and we'll have a look back on Congress and everything that happened in that. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the way it is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I've been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "I Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."